All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence and the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones, everyone. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step two. And we got to flip over to here, and there's a whole lot of reading at the very beginning for step two, which is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So in the big book on page 45 is where we're going to read one, two, three, about six paragraphs here. And it starts with in the preceding chapters. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up, something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted, in fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourselves, which will solve your problem. And I didn't introduce our speaker, so I'll do that now. We have Ryan and Bob, who I think, he didn't go through the tunnel. So he
went through a tunnel.
Half, you did?
Might remember.
See, so he had to go through a tunnel to get here. So that's, that's pretty, I try and avoid the tunnels. But anyway, so they're going to share their experience, strength, and hope on step two with us tonight. You starting, Ryan or Bob? Or
Ryan's first.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Ryan.
The distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, that's kind of important to make before I move forward, because if I'm not an alcoholic, I really don't need to bother with any of this stuff. And it's not always an easy thing to differentiate between, because there's a lot of people out there that just like to drink a lot. Maybe they're hanging out, they're young, that's kind of popular in today's society, or they're having some problems in their life and they're like self-medicating with some booze. With those people, they can make like changes in their lives, like get a hobby or stop hanging out with the wild kids or do something like that, and they'll be able to quit. The best way I know how to illustrate the difference between these two people is to talk about me and my mom. That was always my like perception of what an alcoholic was for the longest time. As a kid, I remember her like drinking a lot. I remember her having blackouts and things like that. I remember sometimes it would cause problems at work because she would like oversleep and things like that. Clearly there's an issue going on with alcohol there. But one night, her and her second husband were having a party, and they were all getting drunk in the basement, and like my stepdad pulled a gun on somebody, and it really freaked my mother out. And the next day she made some changes in her life, and she was able to quit drinking, and she's been fine ever since. You know, this is a woman that you normally would have thought was an alcoholic, but she could quit. You know, she could quit. It might have it was a little bit difficult for her, but she was able to do it. And then there's people like me, where even when I want to quit, or even when I have good reason to quit, I just continue to drink. You know why? Because I'm like a bad person. She was like given like more strength. God likes her better, whatever. No, because I'm powerless over alcohol. You know, I always go back to it no matter what happens. And eventually I realized that I was not going to be able to quit on my own. But the first detox that I was in, I was exposed to AA, and I like that somebody gave me like a little AA book, the first 164 pages, and because I really wanted to quit, I read the thing, and I was exposed to this idea of a spiritual solution, which was really novel to me. I was not an atheist when I got to AA, and I was not a believer when I got to AA. When I was a kid, my mom had taken us to church every now and again, but I like quit going as soon as I could because I thought it was boring. When I got a little bit older, I had a lot of depression. I was suicidal by the time I hit high school, and so I kind of figured if there was a God, he was a screwed up dude, and I really wanted nothing to do with it. And I didn't mess with it for a long time. You know, every now and again, I might think about it or watch a movie or read a book, and you know, but on with life. It just was not something that interested me. But when I read the book, my mind kind of became open to it. And the reason was because I had tried to quit long and hard, unsuccessfully, and this spiritual approach was just novel to me. I hear a lot of people, they talk about like these foxhole prayers that they used to say, you know, where they would get in all this trouble and be like, please, God, get me out of this, and I'll never do it again. Yeah, I didn't even think to do that. that's how far from my mind a spiritual solution was. But when I got to AA, I was willing to take a look at it simply because of pain. This idea of living on suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer, that's like some pretty deep stuff right there. You know what I mean? Like, I am so messed up that there's nothing on this earth that can help me. You know, the best medical minds out there, they've been doing research on this stuff for years and years and years and years and years, you know, and I am so messed up that even the smartest person out there can't save me. You know, that's pretty drastic stuff. This idea of a spiritual experience, man, But I got to that place where you have to face the facts that you either have to live on a spiritual basis or continue to drink. And what I love about step two is it doesn't say, I believe. You know, like belief is not a requirement at this point. And I absolutely love this because I was definitely not a person that like walked into AA, heard y'all talking about God and spirituality and the 12 steps and was like, yes, I believe that is definitely for me. No. I was a person that this happened to me over a period of time. And to be quite honest with you, it involved lots and lots of drinking. You know, I love the ABCs because B says that we have to believe that we're beyond human aid. And I really had to figure that out. And I really had to understand that there was nothing that was going to save me. And I don't know, some people will down me for this, but a lot of the things I tried were even AA, like meetings and sponsorship. You know, when I first got to AA, I heard people say, go to a lot of meetings, go to a lot of meetings, go to a lot of meetings. And I thought that if I just attended these meetings, that I would get sober. And I stayed sober for 4 months. And then I came back and they were like, get a sponsor, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor, you know, and I got myself one of these like hard big book women. And she was like, call me every day at 5:30 and you're going to meet me at my house at every Thursday. And I did exactly that. And I stayed sober for 2 months. You know, and I'm not down in meetings or sponsorship. They're great and they're valuable, but they didn't keep me sober. What they did do for me is they exposed me to this idea of God and the 12 steps so that when I was ready for it, I could pick it up and do it, you know, because I didn't want to do it at first. You know, all this inventory stuff and amends and all the things that they were talking about, like I will get away with, I will avoid it if I can. And I love this part about the mere code of morals and a better philosophy of life and trying to get sober on that. You know, I've always had a code of morals. Like, I don't have a problem with the 12 or the 10 commandments. There's 10 of them. The 10 commandments. See, that's how religious I am, folks. This is not a religious program. The Ten Commandments, they've always seemed like a good thing to me, right? It's like real basic stuff, like don't lie, don't steal, you know, be decent to folks. I don't think that's one of them, but that's the general idea of the whole thing. Those ideals did not save me from alcoholism. You know, a better philosophy of life. I've done lots and lots of those. I used to work at a bookstore. There's an entire self-help section with better philosophies of life. You know, don't sweat the small stuff. Maybe that'll fix everything, right? Just chill out. Don't worry about the little things. Don't let them bother you. Sounds really good. Did not produce any change in my life. Why? Am I like this big, horrible failure, bad person? No, I'm powerless over alcohol. You know, I cannot live up to these things. You know, and I tried really, really hard. You know, I was out there making a big old mess to my life, and I don't ever recall waking up in the morning saying, how can I just like damage and ruin everything? I remember waking up in the morning and trying my absolute best, and failing. Why? Lack of power. That's what it tells me, you know? And when I realized that I really was powerless, that I really could not do this without something bigger than me, once again, my mind just became open to the idea of it. I was not a believer. This idea of getting in touch with the power greater than myself, like, what a mind. Once again, just one of those mind-blowing things. Like, how on earth do you do that? Like, how on earth? Like, who knows, right? Should I, like, you know, join some Buddhist monastery, you know, go spend, like, a couple months in India or something, and we can just, like, zen out and pray? Or maybe I should take, like, the Mother Teresa approach, you know, and just, like, feed the homeless all the time. And very luckily for me, we have a book on it. It gives me very straightforward, clear-cut directions on how to do this. Very simple stuff that even someone like me can understand and follow. And how lucky I am for that. Thank you.
My name is Bob, recovered alcoholic.
Bob.
By saying that, that means I have completed step one, which I think the requirement for doing step two is having some kind of understanding that I'm an alcoholic, that I am unable to stop drinking on my own. And I proved that by the time I was 21. I did the religious stuff a lot when I was growing up. I grew up in a Catholic church. I never felt any connection there, any relief, any feeling of spiritual healing in the church. I always felt disconnected and not a part of and always less than anybody else in church. I always judged myself on how everybody else looked in church. They all had the nice shiny clothes on and the good shoes, and I felt horrible in church. I never felt that God feeling that God loved me and accepted me as a child. And that doesn't make me an alcoholic. It just made me, I don't feel religious relief. And I went through that whole concept of starting to drink. And to me, step two can be used both ways. Because I use alcohol as a higher power to restore me to sanity on a daily basis for quite a while. You know, I drank because I felt completely helpless and hopeless. And when I got alcohol in my system, I felt great. My life was whole and complete. I could do anything I wanted to do. I was bulletproof until the alcohol wore off, and then I felt the same hopeless, helpless, empty feeling that I could never find in anywhere else, in church or in school or with friends or with family, anywhere. And that higher power worked for a while. And I think most alcoholics understand that feeling of, I got two drinks in me. Where's the next one coming from? You know, and that just was a great feeling for quite a while until it stopped working. You know, by the time I was 21, I had gone through the stage of, let me try the born-again Christian stuff. You know, at 17, I went to a religious retreat, and I was born again for about 4 days. You know, that's about how long that lasted for me. And then I tried it again at 18. I was involved in a really good Christian youth group in high school, and I'm still friends with the minister now, but it never felt complete and whole inside. I was faking it for quite a while. Always acting like I had this stuff figured out, you know, and never did. Always feeling empty, alone, afraid, unable to connect with other people, until I had some booze in me. And then everything was great, you know. And then I joined the Navy, and my drinking career lasted another 4 years. And in that time, I stopped drinking for about 6 months. I went to church twice a week, a Catholic church. I was going to gym, working out, and things were doing just fantastic. I was doing really good in the military, and oh, wait, I started drinking again. And all bets were off after that. And that proved to me, in the end, when I finally realized that I could not stop drinking, was taking Anabuse and staring at the refrigerator in my house, waiting the beer to get in my system. I had to wait just 2 days long enough to get the Anabuse out of my system, long enough to get beer in me. And that's a horrible feeling, knowing that I have no control or way to stop drinking. And that's what got me to step two. I had to find something outside of me to fix that. I tried a lot of ways to not drink. Everything that listed in chapter 3 about how to control and manage your drinking, I tried every one of them multiple times. It never worked. And I always, at the end, felt completely hopeless, helpless. And I did the Foxtail prayers quite a bit. You know, if you have enough troubles like I did drinking, when you're always getting arrested or in trouble or wrecking cars, and you're waking up in places you don't know how you got there or remember where your car was at and trying to find out where it was at, you know, I did a lot of this. Please help me get out of this, God, and I'll never do this again. A lot of times. And it lasted about 5 hours, you know, until I had to get a drink in me. You know? And I always did the same thing over and over again, and I got the same results over and over again. And it became very painful. I don't know how I would label myself now, except possibly an agnostic with some understanding. To me, I had to come to a point where it says very completely and fully that I could not stop drinking without something outside of a human being, psychologist, doctor, police officer, judge, you know, incarceration. Nothing could keep me from drinking. And I finally got gut-level honest at some point in rehab, I think, and I just asked some concept of a God to help me. That was my really most honest and evident prayer ever, was just to help me. And for whatever reason, I started figuring out that if I did the same things that these people in AA were doing, I might get the same results. That's where I come to. And then I started doing a lot of religious reading. I read a lot of different Bible groups. I studied a lot of Buddhism and Hinduism, and tried to figure out, because I'm an intellectual type. You know, I like to think things through. So step three, when I got to that, really kicked my butt, because I couldn't understand and explain God. See, I wanted to understand that stuff and figure out this whole higher power stuff, how it can restore me to sanity. If I could understand it and figure it out, I'd be there. And it never worked that way. I had to surrender that concept of understanding it and just believing. And to me, that was the most important concept, is I didn't have to believe everything or anything. The one thing I had to believe for sure, that I wasn't God. I wasn't no longer a higher power in my life. Drinking was no longer working for me. And I had to figure out where the answers were. And I went to AA and rehab in the Navy in 85. And I saw all these happy, shiny people talking about God and how their lives were better. And I felt completely outside of that feeling. You know, I didn't understand how to connect with that. And I was told, like, Ryan, just to keep coming to meetings, a lot of meetings. And back in the 80s, there was this big push of don't drink and go to meetings. And when that didn't work, don't go to meetings and don't drink. And if that didn't work, just go to meetings and go to meetings. And there wasn't a big push on the steps in the big book back in the 80s. It's evolved quite a bit over the years. But what I saw, I'm a realist, I'm a thinker. I want actual evidence that this crap was working for somebody. And they showed me every day in a meeting. I could see people, shiny, happy people, not drinking. They had jobs, they had families, they had clean clothes. Most of them had, you know, washed and bathed daily, you know. It's an important factor if you're drunk like me. That didn't happen often when I was drinking. And I saw this evidence, actual true evidence, that people would be restored to some semblance of sanity. And to me, that was an important step, that I could see that agnostic, atheist, religious people, Christians, Buddhists, Jewish people, every walk of life was walking into AA, getting sober, and being happy, and living productive lives. That, to me, is an honest way to restore to sanity. And all he did was show up at meetings and work the steps. You know, and I'll stop with that and let Ryan talk some more.
All right, we're going to go to page 46, the paragraph that starts, "Much to our relief." Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
Yeah, this conception of God stuff. When I first read the book, you know, I started thinking about all this spiritual stuff, and I instantly thought that I, like, needed to define God, you know, and I kind of went on a couple-week quest to do this, and I started to, it was very confusing and very difficult. I remember trying to, like, just decide what God was, you know, is it like this big guy in the sky with like a white beard, and I really didn't care for that because then he was like punishing me, and I'm like, why are you being mean to that, being so mean to me, and I just set on this quest to figure it out, and I really didn't know how to like pick a God, like am I supposed to pick like the Christian God or the Buddhist God, you know, there's like so many different religions out there these days, you know, it's like which one is right, you know, how do I know which one to follow or which one to pick, and it was just this giant mess in my head, and that's why I kind of quit doing all of that. You know, eventually it just came to a point where I just really don't care what it is, and I had to go very simple, and I decided to believe in something. Well, actually, I decided to be willing to believe in something, because I didn't believe, to be quite honest with you, till I came here and did the work and it worked. I just decided to believe in something, and you know, it's weird, it's just that open-mindedness was enough for me to get results. I remember very shortly after doing this like mental mind mess of what am I supposed to believe, what am I supposed to believe, what am I supposed to believe, just sitting out on my porch, totally spun up, my head's going crazy, I've got all these like huge like life crises that I'm dealing with, and I'm trying to figure out what I need to do, and this is my first attempt, I think, at a sincere prayer, and I just threw my hands up in the air, and my prayer was something like, you know, I don't even know what you are, but help me out here. And instantly, something happened. Instantly, my mind calmed down. You know, instantly, there was like this peace that settled in. You know, right here it says that as soon as we admit the possible existence of a creative intelligence, God, whatever you want to call it, we begin to get results, you know? And that's what I love. It works so instantly for me. Just letting go of that control and just being willing to believe. You know, it's that simple. Belief is such a powerful thing. And I remember, because I struggle with it on and off. Like I said, this happened for me over a period of time. This lady, she pointed out this passage to me, and she asked me to look up the definitions of a variety of words in here. And I forget what they were. Let's see here. And so I did that, and it kind of like opened my mind up to all this stuff. Broad, roomy, inclusive, exclusive. And she had me write all the definitions down and go back and read it. And once again, it was just kind of a mind-opening experience, something that helped me along the way. That's all I got to say.
Okie dokie. What I like about this whole thing is about the conception of God and other people's conception of God. I like to take the devil's advocate and everything and have lovely in-depth conversations with people. And early on in sobriety, every night we used to go out for coffee after the meetings. And I'd love to sit and talk to people and explain my viewpoint of God and how it didn't work and prove they were wrong night after night. And that got me, you know, nowhere real quick. But it was fun for me because I could prove myself right. You know, and I hate that not being right thing. And not understand, the big thing was why? Because I was afraid I was wrong. You know, if you have a strong enough viewpoint and put it down people's throats, you must be right. And I was really just afraid that I couldn't figure out God. You know, and it wouldn't work for me. And I started going to meetings, and little by little, I started to figure out that I didn't have to understand God. I didn't have to actually explain God. It says take a few simple steps. And that's all I had to do. I still have, after a long time in sobriety, inadequate understanding of God. But I've got some really strong evidence that he's working in my life today. Very strong evidence. I could give you some examples later on about what's happened recently. But to me, the debate had to stop. Trying to figure it out, understand it, analyze it, and more importantly, stop explaining it to other people. You know, because my viewpoint at times is crap. And I have no problem saying that now. Years ago, that would have been argued for days. But to me, the most fundamental and important statement in this is possessed with a new sense of power and direction. Because my powerlessness and directionlessness led me to almost suicide and death, you know. And I found people in AA who had a direction in life. They had a power that worked on them on a daily basis, and they weren't drinking. Man, that's a great thing, because I woke up every morning trying not to drink and couldn't do it. And if I was told just to show up at meetings, believe in something outside of myself, and just do these simple steps and actions, and I would get the same results, and after 9 months I was getting those results, that's some pretty powerful evidence. And I saw people doing that. I saw hopeless, helpless, crazy people getting sober. You know, just imaginable. Then I've seen other people who just could not, for any way possible, accept anything greater than themselves, and they die drunk. And that's powerful evidence too. So to me, once I stopped debating it and trying to figure it out, it started working better. And I love this thing about too hard of terms. Man, we got a great disease process. All you have to do is not drink, go to meetings, read a book, not a series of books, one book, practice 12 steps, and help others. No chemo, no surgeries, no radiation, no impossible, you know, exercise program, you know, just simple actions, you know, it's amazing. How much better does that get? And I'm relieved for the madness of my brain on a daily basis? Wow, that's pretty powerful stuff from a God that I can't understand or see, you know, but I see evidence every day. I've been to, I don't know, thousands of meetings over the years, and I've seen evidence every day that this power that I can't explain works. You know, it's just it's a fundamental belief. If all it took was religious aspects, I mean, the world would be a great place. They already have religious aspects. It doesn't work for alcoholics on a daily basis because we have a mind that doesn't work that way. At least I don't anyways. So to me, that anybody, anywhere with any belief system can walk into a meeting and work this program is a fantastic thing. You know, I don't understand explaining God. For early on, for a long time, my higher power was AA. Not just AA in general, but the power of the rooms and the people in it. You know, the connection we have in here, the one-on-one or the group concept of AA is such a great power. It relieves us of ourselves daily. And if you have a belief like me where my mind is very powerful, that relief of sanity is a very important aspect. So I'll stop with that.
All right. We're going to move on to page 47, the paragraph that starts, "We needed to ask ourselves." We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Ryan.
Yeah, I always make step two more complicated, but it is just a matter of being willing to believe. You know, do you think it's even possible that there is something out there that can help you? You know, yes or no. If the answer is yes, we can move forward. If the answer is no, perhaps we need to have more discussion. Maybe you need to drink some more like I did. Who knows? But that is enough. And I had very inadequate conceptions. Something was good for me. Every now and again, I like to make up names. I picked Fred. I have no idea who Fred was, but I prayed to Fred for a while. But I was willing to believe in something, and I played all these little tricks because sometimes I have issues with the God stuff. I don't know, it just seems like the mean guy who's doing stuff with me, and it's hard for me to do business with that, you know, and so I can't use the word God anymore. So I go back to these things like Fred. I like the creative intelligence thing. I like the spirit of the universe, my creator, you know, all that fruity stuff. But that is always enough. And it says a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built from that. And that was definitely my experience. It is enough. I mean, I can expound upon it over and over again, but I feel like I'm just kind of repeating myself. It really is just a willingness to believe, and thank goodness for that.
It's just a simple question, you know, do you believe or willing to believe anything? You know, I believe alcohol worked quite a bit. I ask people this one even more simple question. Are you God? If the answer is yes, they're beyond my help anyways as a sponsor. But if the answer is no, we have a starting point. You know, that's it. And I believed I was at least the most powerful person in the room I was in. You know, and that's where I had to start from, is I am no longer my higher power. And how I manifest that, you know, believing anything. I believed in AA for a long time. I could see it daily working in me, because I went from a person who couldn't stop drinking for a day at a time to a person who didn't drink for months at a time, and my life was getting better. And so I had to start asking myself, what am I going to believe in? Because I'm being restored to something. My brain is working better. I'm making better decisions. I'm actually showing up at work and doing everyday work. You know, I'm getting better results in every aspect of life. I got a license back. I got a car with insurance. Something's restoring me here, and I'm not doing it myself. So then when I had to start believing in some aspect of outside help, whether it was a sponsor or other guys in AA, and then I started seeing how they were working their God business. You know, they were praying daily. Wow, and they were actually going to church. And the golden rule thing you were talking about, do unto others as they would unto you. You know, I did unto others a lot. And there was a lot of consequences there, you know, lots of consequences. I don't like going to jail or being, you know, stop stealing my money business. I hated that business. You owe me money, give it back. You know, I didn't like being told that. But when I started actually doing the opposite, doing good things for other people, you know, doing nice things and giving people rides and loaning money, not expecting it back, and just doing the golden rule to other people on a daily basis, I started feeling better, and I enjoyed that feeling. And I wanted more of it, just like any alcoholic I know. I want more of anything. So I was repeatedly proven wrong a lot of times over the years. And then I started seeing this foundation. Early on in sobriety, we always talked about having a strong foundation in AA. And like I said, it's a cornerstone. Whatever that cornerstone is for you, whether it's meetings or a sponsor or a certain person AA or some step in the book, something that you can put your belief in, that cornerstone can be built from. You know, and that's what I had to do, is find a cornerstone, something I could build on, and it, to me, it's been pretty effective for quite a while.
Thank you. All right, moving on to page 52 with the paragraph we had to ask. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
Yeah, the bedevilments, that's what they call them here. And I have to tell you, it was more so this than alcohol that drove me into AA. Because if I could have drank and not had problems with my personal relationships, kept my emotions okay, not been miserable and depressed, not had problems at work, not had problems in my relationships, and be happy, I would have drank for the rest of my life. I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, all these things came to happen, and I just couldn't do it. And what was really surprising to me was to discover that when I stopped drinking, these things did not magically disappear. And that does not make sense to me, you know, because here I am, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not drinking anymore. Everything should be fine, right? Unfortunately, for me, when I stop drinking, everything is not fine. You know, I still have all these things. You know, it's funny because I remember, like, these were actually why I was drinking so much, you know, because when I'm sober, I feel this, and that drinking gives me relief from all of these things. I remember, you know, I was sober for the first 16 years of my life, 24/7, and it was awful, absolutely awful, you know. I was just like this, like, messed up person. I had difficulty. I just felt awkward and uncomfortable all the time, you know. And I had, like, brief periods of sobriety prior to coming to AA. I remember I was sober for, like, 5 whole days straight. My husband had taken some vacation, and I wasn't supposed to be drinking anymore. And I couldn't, like, sneak it because he was around me all the time. And we were driving down the road on, like, day 5 of vacation, and it was supposed to be wonderful. And we're, like, going to the park because we're going to go on a nature walk. Doesn't that sound nice? Nice little nature walk. And we're and we're driving over there, and he's just, like, driving the car, minding his own business, like, not doing anything, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And I'm, like, looking at this guy, and I just kind of want to kill him a little bit, you know? You know, and I'm not sure why, but it's just like, you know, your very existence right now is offensive to me. You know? And that was me when I was sober. And more so than how to not drink, most of my life I wanted to know, like, how do you be okay? How do you be okay? You know, I remember I struggled a lot during the first year of sobriety, and at first it was great because I found, like, all these people that I could relate to, you know, and they when I talked to them about the crazy in my head, they were like, yeah, I know about the crazy in the head. And when I talked to them about drinking and all that crazy stuff, they were like, yeah, I know about drinking and all that crazy stuff. But eventually I was like, okay, I understand the crazy, I understand the drinking, you know, but how do you make it stop? For the love of God, will you tell me how to make it stop? And I was confused for a long time in AA because they were like offering me like all these millions of different solutions, you know? And I just could never figure out like what problem went with what answer, and it was absolute mess, you know? So finally I was asking, I'm like, this sober stuff, I don't think it's what it's supposed to be, you know? Do you have an answer for this? Do you have an answer for this? And they were like, yes. Yes, we do. It's the same thing that you've been hearing us talk about for the past year. We have a God of your understanding in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And I got to see it work in people's lives. You know, there are people in AA that there's just something different about them. You know, they would talk in meetings, and when they would talk, I would actually listen. I would stop, like, looking at the ceiling or at my toes or, you know, playing on my phone or whatever it is. Like, the chatter would die down long enough for me to absorb a little bit of what they were saying. You know, and these were people that were laughing. Oh, my gosh, I love to laugh. And I was very interested in all that stuff. And they told me about this God stuff, you know. There are people, they didn't offer me any other solution. And I'm so glad, you know, because if they'd given me something else, I wouldn't have bought into it. You know, I've done it. If there's an answer there, I tried it. I tried everything I could think of. And I got to see it work in y'all's lives. And it helped me not to stop doubting. Because to be honest with you, I came here, and it's funny that we're talking about God so much, but I remember sitting in meetings and just thinking how freaking weird it was. Like, really? Are you kidding me? I'm like in a room sitting in a circle and these people are like talking about God. Like, who does that? You know? Who does that? Maybe church people, but I didn't go to church. I had never seen anything like it before in my entire life. And like afterwards, they would stand in a circle and they would hold hands, and they would pray, and depending on what meeting you went to, they would like chant and stuff. You know, it was just weird. But my ideas, just like it said, did not work. You know, and I had a lot of ideas about how to fix this problem, how to solve it. You know, I had seen a lot of doctors over the year. I probably had a couple $100,000 worth of therapy. Thank you, health insurance. I had, tried exercising. I was a big exerciser. I like to go to the YMCA and get on that little elliptical machine, you know, and try and endorphin my way into a fix for this problem, you know. I was on medication for a lot of years, and it just didn't work. Post-it notes. I love post-it notes, you know. Don't drink today. You know, these are the kind of ideas that I came to AA with, and they didn't work. But the God idea did. You know, the God idea did. I didn't walk into AA a believer. You know, it's just, I don't know. Like I said, it's strange. I did not walk in here. But, you know, I was so desperate that I decided to give it a try. You know, I showed up and I did the steps that Bob's been talking about. And I was incredibly shocked. And I was incredibly relieved to find that it worked, you know. The obsession to drink got removed. The crazy in my head chilled the heck out. You know, I'm not really sure where all that nonsense went, you know. But it's gone. It's gone. And it's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. Thank you. Your turn.
I was reading this and I had a real clear concept of this is basically the promises in reverse. We're full of fear, or we're useless, we're unhappy, we couldn't find a way to help other people. And that was me before I quit drinking, and it was after I quit drinking for quite a while. Because I was still full of fear. I was getting a job, but I was barely making a living. I was useless in meetings because I had no message to other people other than don't drink no matter what. You know, just go, keep coming back. You'll make it. That's all I had to say for quite a while. And nothing changed. I was still miserable on the inside and had this big, fake, outside crap going on for years. And after 4.5 years of not working the steps, after step two, even a half a step or two, I guess, nothing changed inside my head. I was full of all these negative relationships. I had the same friendships and relationship with women over and over, the same pattern month after month after year. I had no way to get a close connection with anybody. My family life had not improved at all. I was still in the military, and that hadn't changed at all. And I was miserable. And I talked about it. I was at the jumping off point in sobriety where I had to make a change. And I went to a 12-step retreat in Connecticut with a bunch of other alcoholics I'd been friends with for quite a while. And I got into steps 2 and 3 that weekend. I went with another guy I was friends with, and we went out into a little park area and prayed for about 2 hours together. I just knew I had to make a change because I was either going to get drunk or get dead, and I didn't like either option, you know. And he asked me one simple thing: is all these problems you're having, everything you do in life is screwed up because you're not willing to change. And it says, are we willing to try to apply this same stuff to our regular problems? And it was the God thing. I couldn't figure out God, but I knew I had to make some fundamental belief in something. And after multiple years of this, my fear started lessening. You know, I started having better relationships with people, you know, with my family and friends and coworkers. It's amazing how that works, just by not doing the screwed up things you used to do. I still got a lot of room in that area. I'm still full of fear at times. It doesn't go away completely. But the basic solution is the same thing every day. Ask God for help. Whatever that is. I've been doing a lot of praying the last few weeks over some situations in my life that are actually getting better. And it's only because I've been letting God do the work and not me do the screwed up stuff, like trying to intervene and make things better. But I had to have tangible evidence of that. I had to actually see it happen in my life daily before I started really putting into action without questioning it. I don't know how that happened over just a lot of years of doing the wrong things for the wrong reasons. Doing the right things for the right reasons make a lot better sense. My concept of God has not changed much. I still can't explain it to you. I just know it works. And my problems in life today are much more manageable thanks to just a fundamental belief in something outside of me. That's all I got.
Thanks. All right, now this is where it gets tricky. Pay attention. We're going to Appendix 2, which is in this book on page 568. It's the second page of the spiritual experience in the little books I don't know. It's after Appendix 1. And it's going to be the first paragraph that starts, "Most of us think." Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. Ryan. Go ahead.
My name is Bob, not Ryan.
Bob.
Yes. God consciousness. That's a pretty freaking powerful word there, huh? Because I had a consciousness, too, for a long time, and it wasn't connected to God. It was connected to my self-will. And the key thing for me is having an open mind. How do I develop an open mind is very challenging for me. It's usually based on pain. Spiritual and emotional pain opens my mind at times. I certainly didn't come to this concept overnight or even in the first couple years. God consciousness. You know, I think all day, every day. My brain's constantly running. Even when I'm sleeping, it's pretty heavy. So how do I tap into a God consciousness? Because it says awareness of a power greater than me. Awareness means something inside of my head is actually conceiving that and actually believing it. And I see that daily when I still my thoughts just enough. And that's hard to do. I don't meditate regularly. My normal morning routine is to hit the snooze about 6 times. And between the snooze buttons, I'm actually contemplating some things in life. You know, I'm mulling things over my head. I'm figuring out what the day is going to be like. I'm thinking about problems in my life that need to be managed or changed or something. And then at the end of that, I actually make a simple prayer, that work for me every day. That's how I tap into that consciousness. And then during the day, at moments of some clarity at times when I'm not screwing things up too much, I actually can slow down, stop my mouth from saying something or do an action. I had a clear evidence of this about a month ago. I had a sponsee attempt suicide. I got a text message that very clearly stated that they were doing that. They said, "It's not my fault. I love you. I'll watch over you." Very clear to me what was going on. And several hours later, when we couldn't find this person, and police couldn't find her, nobody could find her, I stopped my car from driving, and I just asked God to help me take care of this person. And I got a phone call 10 minutes later that they found him, found her, and she was in the hospital. And she's alive and well and doing great. That's a freaking pretty powerful evidence to me that this stuff works, as long as I'm willing to just ask. And that's all I got to say.
Yeah, the idea of a spiritual experience, it is a daunting one. But one of the things that took the pressures off of me was I actually looked up the definition of the word experience. And what it said was very simply, knowledge gained through practice. You know? And that helped a lot for me, because like, how on earth do you have a spiritual experience? And for me, it was as simple as practicing the 12 steps, you know, going through the next 12 ones and continuing to do it on a regular basis. And as a result of that, I have developed an awareness or a belief and a faith, more importantly, a faith. You know, it's one thing to believe in something. It's an entirely different thing to actually have faith in something. You know, I believe in the government. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that the government exists. Do I have much faith in the government? Okay. Do you see the difference? You know. But through this practice of the program, you know, before I could do that, I had to be willing to believe, you know, and I had to be willing to try it. Because if I wasn't willing to try it, I never would have gotten those results. And just like he said, you know, it was a matter of pain. Pain and desperation are the only thing that made me do this. Earlier, somewhere in the book, it talks about this sense of hopelessness and futility. You know, that's what got me to try this stuff. I remember it. The last couple of weeks of drinking, being suicidal, drinking on a daily basis, you know, knowing that my job was going to soon disappear, knowing that a place to live was going to soon disappear, and continuing to drink, you know, not because I wanted to, but because I just could not seem to stop myself. It was like the great mystery of the world that I couldn't seem to figure out. You know, and just sitting there and realizing, like, this is the best it's ever gonna get. This is it. This is the rest of my life, you know? And the idea of dying didn't particularly faze me very much. I would have been perfectly okay with that. Can we please get it over with now? It was the idea of surviving and being forced to live another 60 years that way. You know, I was 29 years old. My great-grandmother lived to be 98. You know, that's a lot of torturous stuff to live through. You know, some people think that hell's a place that you go when you die. I will disagree with you. I lived it. I woke up in it every day, and I went to bed every day in it. You know, and there was absolutely no escaping it. Hopeless and futility, you know? And so I did. I started to practice the things that you guys were talking about. You know, when that doubt creeps in my mind, because it does, even to this day, sometimes I struggle with it, you know? I have to go back to this. Am I willing to believe? You know, and once again, just that willingness to believe and say, okay, maybe, you know, absolutely changes everything. You know, it's incredible how something so simple can make such a difference in my life. You know, just saying the prayer, even though I don't believe. You know, I've gotten down on my knees before, and my prayer started, God, I don't really believe in you. You know? But then I prayed the way that I was taught to pray in AA, you know? And once again, that has been indispensable to me, to lay aside that prejudice that continues to come back, that continues to chatter in my mind, to lay it aside. and to be willing, honest, and open-minded, you know? And the honesty that I always have to look at is my way working? Am I doing okay without this spirituality stuff? And the answer is always no. You know, always no. That's the honesty I have to have. And it has been absolutely indispensable. I think I already said that, but whatever.
Keep saying it.
I will.
All right. I'm going to read these last two paragraphs, and then we'll probably be out of time. It's on page 17. And it's, we are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Thank you, Ryan and Bob, for sharing with us. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. All right. Are there any related AA-related announcements? Wow, no hands. All righty. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise their hands. Woohoo! Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? Not to embarrass you, we'd just like to welcome you to the meeting by your first name.
My name's Trey, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Trey, welcome.
My name is Alvin.
Hey, Alvin, welcome. All right, let's see. Point out that the literature is somewhere available in the back of the room. Okay, please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? Righty. Closing. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, we are all invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, that Mexican restaurant on Colonial and 22nd Street. And who has a book open to page 164 for the last two paragraphs? I ran.
Our book is meant to suggest that only if you realize we know a little, we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you than to us, asking you more in meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something that has not. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happiness. May God bless you, keep you, and keep you.
Thank you, Irene. And for those who care to join us, we're going to form a circle and have the Lord's Prayer.
But deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,